Okay, we are back here, and I am elated because I've missed her. I've missed her so much. She hasn't been here for a little bit, but Sylvia Hasenkopf is here, and she is here. We are going to be talking about the Thomas Cole letters, I believe, today. And hello.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. And as you know how we usually start this out, if you could tell the people a little bit about yourself.
Gosh, what shall I talk about that I haven't talked about already? Well, I don't know. I'm a person that likes to wear a lot of different hats. You know, as a historian, I think the thing that defines a historian is the fact that they are eternally curious. So, you know, it's a horrible thing because once you start researching something, you end up kind of going down a different road because you unearth something really interesting. And all of a sudden, you end up in a different century and a different person than what you were originally researching. But that's kind of the beauty of it as well. So one of the things that I really love to do is to tackle projects that no one's done before that have really piqued my interest. And as a historian, I have the opportunity to write about that for the Greenville Pioneer, which I do an article every 2 weeks, and writing one right now. And I also write books. So published last year, the Carroll's Hometown Heroes, One Small Town's History of Sacrifice and Patriotism, which was a beautiful book that Flint Mine Press, a local publisher here in Coxsackie, put together for us at the Carroll Historical Society. And what I want to talk about today is my next really exciting project, writing project that I'm working on.
Yes, and do tell, Sylvia. Do tell. What do we got going on here?
Well, for years I have done, you know, local research. I mean, I'm pretty expert on things that are going on in Greene County back to the very beginning of its first settlers. And years ago, the Thomas Cole House had reached out to me to help them do some research when they were developing their furnishings plan.
So, Thomas Cole. Say I know nothing about Thomas Cole.
Okay.
And we have a couple minutes for you to totally educate me on Thomas Cole. Who is, what is, and tell us all about Mr. Cole.
Absolutely. Well, Thomas Cole was born in England, Bolton-le-Moor, in Lancashire, just near Liverpool. And he migrated with his family in 1818 to North America. And he was only 17 when he stepped off the ship in Philadelphia. And always had a strong talent for artistic things. He was trained, you know, as an engraver and that sort of thing. His father was in the muslin and cotton industry back in Bolton, which was a huge area for muslin and cotton manufacturing. It was just enormous.
Muslin?
Muslin.
Muslin, yes.
Muslin.
And I'm sorry, what is that?
It's a fabric.
Really? Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't know that.
It's a fine fabric. I mean, if you put it up, you can actually kind of see through it.
Really?
Yeah. And it was actually, I'm trying to remember, I've got this at home because I need to know this. If my memory serves me, it was developed like Iran, Persia area.
Makes sense.
And it's something that England and Europe didn't have. You know, they had coarse fabrics, you know, woven kind of stuff. But right. Muslin was a much finer fabric that was used, you know, for, you know, the wealthy, you know, for the most part, and other things as well. So Thomas Cole was trained in that and in blocking, you know, creating patterns for fabric.
Certain type of stitching.
Not stitching, but creating the blocks. You know, you create blocks for fabric to put patterns on fabric.
Right, okay.
He was taught how to do that.
Okay.
You know, and then he was taught to become an engraver as well before he migrated to North America. So they got off the ship in 1818 in Philadelphia, and Thomas Cole ended up staying in Philly, took a little side trip to St. Eustatius Island in the Caribbean with a friend, while his parents moved on to Steubenville, Ohio.
Really?
Yeah, and they stayed there for 2 or 3 years, well, a little bit longer than that, 1818 to about 1823. Thomas Cole joined them a year after, so about 1819 he arrives in Steubenville, works with his dad, then he moves off into, starts his peregrinations, as I like to say, he starts his wandering. He ended up in Zanesville, which is like an hour and a half by car away from Steubenville in Ohio. He's there for a little bit, and then the family moves to Pittsburgh, and they're there for a while. Thomas Cole returns to Philadelphia and basically has, by that time, embraced the idea of becoming a painter. Now, most people realize that being a painter in those days doesn't necessarily mean you made any money.
Right.
It was a passion for him. It was a passion that took over his life. I mean, he became obsessed with painting.
Now, when you say painter, he became, if I'm correct, he became a certain type of painter.
Right.
That he had a certain type of subject that
right.
he actually became actually the first and renowned
right.
painter of.
He was the founder of the Hudson River School, which was landscape painting.
Yes.
And, you know, he did try portrait painting, and he did it on and off throughout his career. There's not that many examples of his work, but I found some that people are not aware of, which is kind of cool because that will work well with my book.
Right.
And, you know, but for the most part, people know him as the landscape painter.
Right.
And, you know, he ended up in Catskill staying in the summers and renting a room.
Specifically American landscapes.
Well, you know, he went to England and he painted English landscapes. He went there twice. He went to Italy twice. He did quite a bit of painting there.
Okay.
And even when he returned from those trips, he would continue from his sketchbooks to paint, like Mount Vesuvius or Mount Etna, I should say. I'm not sure if he did Vesuvius. I don't think so. I think he did Mount Etna. There's quite a few of them. Different kinds of views around Florence, different kinds of views around Rome where he stayed, Venice. You know, he really embraced that landscape, which is so different from North American landscape, you know, in our wilds of the Catskills.
Right.
You know, so anyways, what I'm doing is, over the years, I've done a number of projects for the Cole House, and I had asked Betsy Jacks, the executive director, like, you know, hasn't anybody ever transcribed his letters? Because they were asking me to help them do that, because the writing is not always that easy. And
that's a pretty big honor and task to
right.
to tackle.
Oh, it is. And she said nobody had ever done it, you know.
Oh, okay.
And I started asking where the letters were, and they had some copies of letters from, you know, Elwood Perry, who was, you know, one of the main Cole scholars that have existed in North America. But then I got kind of curious, because when I finished my book on the Hometown Heroes last year, maybe about 3 or 4 months before it was published, I started to noodle around, well, what am I going to do next, you know, and I needed something that would entertain me. And I said, well, what about transcribing the letters of Thomas Cole? It's something I do all the time anyway, because as a historian, I do this kind of work nonstop. And so I said, okay. I met with Flip Mind Press again and said to them, what do you think, guys? Is this something that you'd be interested in? And I hardly got the words out, and they said, we're in, because they just love the idea of putting these together. So I started to collect the letters.
Now, collecting, wasn't there 1,200 letters?
Well, nobody knows that there's that many. I mean, I found them, but most people had no idea there's that many.
Right.
I mean, the main repositories are, you know, the State Library in Albany, the Albany Institute of History and Art, the Wadsworth Museum, the Detroit Institute of Art has some, New York State Historical Society has a few, and that's probably all anybody really knew about, but I have up to 28 repositories now where I've found letters.
Okay.
And I'm still finding more. So
right.
It's just really fun to be able to do that. And what I thought would be a one-volume set, one-volume book, is now turning out to be a three-volume set.
Really?
Well, so many letters.
Right, right.
There's just no way to put them all in one book, you know. So
now the volumes, are they go by the years?
Right. Volume 1 will cover the period of 1820, which is the earliest letter I have from Thomas Cole. He didn't write it. It was a letter written to him, actually, while he was living in Steubenville. And so that's the earliest letter, and I ended the first book at the end of 1836, which is pretty much the end of his bachelorhood. He marries Mariah Bartow, whose uncle Sandy owned the Cedar Grove.
Okay.
Okay. And so by that time, you know, Thomas Cole was renting some rooms from that family and had known Mariah for quite some time and got married in November of 1836. And 1836 also is the end of the showing of his first really huge allegorical work, which was The Course of Empire. Hugely successful. And it somehow just seemed fitting that that's where book one would end.
Well, you said that was his first one?
Allegorical series.
Oh, okay.
Which is, there's a theme.
Right.
It was a theme of five paintings.
Okay.
You know, he's done a lot of individuals. He's done pictures of the same place, you know, but this was like a theme. There was a real process, you know, from beginning to end of that.
But it was the first one of that.
Of that type. Yes. And it was really, he'd made it, in other words. So the first book goes from unknown to established.
Right.
You know, I mean, people knew of him before that, but that put him on the mark, on the map.
Now, when we get back from Steubenville, and then we're here now in our area, there's a castle up on the hill, am I correct? Right on the other side of the river.
Oh, Olana.
Yes.
Yes.
And then there's also the museum that is on this side of the river.
Cedar Grove.
But what brought him here to this specific area?
Well, he was down in New York City. He came from Philadelphia, and he ended up going to New York City. And he had put some five paintings that he had done in a window. And someone, an M. Bruin, had seen, you know, the paintings and purchased at least one of them. And kind of financed a trip up the Hudson River to do some more painting.
Really?
Right.
Okay.
So the first paintings were in of the Catskill area. They were kind of probably more a Philly area, I think, probably Delaware Gap area, that sort of thing, because he had, I don't believe at this point that he had gone up the river yet. So Mr. Bruin had said, well, here, take some money, go north, do some research trip and paint some more. And he had gone all the way up to the Albany area, Troy area. And then I think, you know, when you're on the boat, you're going by the mountains. You know, I think they intrigued him.
Well, I think I heard that, too, that he thought this was the most beautiful, magnificent area that he had ever seen.
Yes, yes. And, I mean, I just came back. Last week, I was actually in Detroit researching through his sketchbooks at the Detroit Institute of Art, and also went to Steubenville for 3 days.
Really?
Yes, and then I was in Pittsburgh for a day.
Wow.
Because I wanted to see what was there about him, but also I want to get a sense of distance, a sense of what the landscape was like. I mean, I'll tell you, Pennsylvania is gorgeous.
I used to live in Philly, actually, at one point in my life.
But Pittsburgh was totally took me by surprise. You know, I'm thinking steel capital, must be dirty and ugly. And
no, it's changed. It used to be in that way a lot.
It's not that now.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. It's like hills everywhere. I couldn't believe how many bridges there were.
Mm-hmm.
And green and welcoming. And I really liked Pittsburgh, I should say. And then the drive from Western Pennsylvania going home.
The Poconos and all that area, too.
Yeah, the Poconos is way on the east, but the in between was just gorgeous. I mean, there's hills everywhere, and there's fracking everywhere. And that's one thing. When I was in Steubenville, I kind of looked around at the town, and they've suffered from change. Because they were big in the coal industry. I drove by a place where there's a huge mound of coal. They were big in steel. Now they're big in natural gas. And I was talking to some locals, and they basically said to me that, you know, they believe fracking is going to save them.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Yeah, and I said, good luck with your groundwater. May save your pocketbook, may kill you, you know. But anyways, that you could see it. You could see the fracking going on everywhere, and they have all kinds of chimneys all over the place, you know, industrial chimneys.
Spewing out the,
where you see the flames coming out, where they're off-gassing and that sort of thing. And it was really interesting because Steubenville, I think at the time the family arrived there, was relatively new. It was only maybe 20 years old. You know, it was a very young village. And, you know, the river's right there, the Ohio River's right beside it. It reminded me of Catskill in some ways, you know. And there was a lot of industry going on. You know, Ohio as a state was just starting to be settled, and there was a lot of opportunity. But things didn't work out for the family there. Yeah.
So by doing this, by going to Pittsburgh and Steubenville and Philadelphia, I think, did you say Philadelphia?
I've been to Philly before.
But that just brought you in a way where you could somehow maybe get back to the time that he was doing this and get the feel of the surroundings. I'm sure a lot of it's changed, but still trees are trees and the surrounding and the mountains are still going to be there. So
well,
I could see that, trying to get the
get that feeling. You know, what was it like? What was the travel like? I mean, he walked. When he joined his family, he and his companion walked from... Sorry, my cold's still there.
Okay, do you need to take a break?
And
okay, so we're going
to
be right back. Okay, we're back here.
I'm still alive.
Yes, you are. Well, it's understandable. You had that call. That's why I said at the beginning of the program that I missed you, because you had to skip out the couple weeks ago because you were a little under the weather. And I've been hearing
still
a lot
recuperating.
About this. It just keeps on holding on for weeks and weeks.
And I didn't get to the doctor because I was traveling last week, and so I was nowhere near a physician to get the appropriate things. And then it was just like a horrible week, but it was such an amazing week being out there, you know, walking in the footsteps of Thomas Cole at the end of the day. And so I really enjoyed, you know, going out there. And as I was saying, is Thomas Cole actually walked all the way from Philadelphia to Steubenville. He actually made that walk. I mean, walking back then was something everybody did, it seems, and it was no big deal.
I used to do it as a kid all the time. I always used to walk for miles and miles. And
absolutely.
I was invincible. But then it was quite a long distance.
And it's hilly. It's not like it's a nice flat walk. It was like up one hill and down another hill. That, I mean, my drive was like that.
And they didn't have air conditioning rooms they could go into to cool down and do all that.
Absolutely. So anyways, after, you know, having the opportunity to do that, you know, it helps me understand a little bit about who the man was and what drove him to paint. You know, it was really just something that was in his soul, I think. And so, you know, the letters now, I have almost 1,200 letters, and, you know, I've finished transcribing all the letters from book one. So there's 375 letters in book one, unless I find another one for that period. But that's pretty much what I think is going to be in the first book. And I'm in the midst of annotating and, you know, deciding what images are going to be in there and, you know, what other cool stuff I can find. Because I'm not an art historian, and I'm not writing this as an art historian. I'm writing this as a historian. And as I like to say, I'm a vernacular historian. I like to write to the people.
Right.
Not to the academics. I like to write to the people. So that if you picked up the book, or a person off the street in Catskill picked up the book, they would read it because they would find cool stuff in there.
Right.
Besides the letters. And that's the way I would like to write it, you know. So I'll have vignettes on, you know, Cedar Grove, on his time in Steubenville, on the Thompson family, which is Mariah Bartow's family, on all kinds of things like that, you know.
Which is very interesting, because there's so many people around here that are totally into Thomas Cole.
Yeah.
Into the museum, into Alana, and
yeah,
doing
cool
all
stuff
that.
Going
and,
on.
And it's a lot of history. It's a lot of local history. It's a lot of history that is gathered from outside of local that it ended up here.
Exactly.
And like you said, coming from the historian point of view, in a way, is more acceptable, or more connection to people, that they're not just reading it for the academic purposes, but they're reading it for the historical part, and that's important.
So many books have already been written about him from an academic point of view.
Right.
You know, in terms of the art technique, and like the chiaroscuro, and, you know, the type of landscape painting he was doing, juxtaposed to the way they were painting in England at the same time. You know, so although I will probably have mention of that, that will not be the focus of this. I'm far more interested in things like, one of the things that every painter back then did is they made sure that their paintings were framed properly.
Okay.
So there's a whole process behind, you know, stretching your canvas and, you know, putting a gilded frame around it. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about that, because I think that's kind of cool.
Well, yeah, I mean, even in today's common, you know, situation, I it's important for me, the frames that I have on. I mean, because that in itself can really add to
the way it looked.
The worth of the eye checking it out. It's a big difference.
It was. And because back then they loved those beautiful, you know, kind of gilded frames that were rather ornamental.
Right.
A lot of his work was, you know, framed that way. And he worked with one company almost exclusively, Parker and Clover, down in New York City.
Okay.
So I'm going to dive into who they were and, you know, what they did. And because they did other things, too. They did looking glasses, because they had those beautiful frames and stuff like that. So just other kinds of information that put some context around the man and his times.
Right.
You know, like the yellow fever killed so many people in New York City in 1832. Well, what's the yellow fever? What about the fire in 1835 that wiped out almost all of Manhattan?
Right.
How did that affect him and his family who were living there?
Right.
You know, things like that.
Well, that is cool.
Yeah, well, thank you. So, to that end, though, you know, obviously I'm in the midst of fundraising for the book because it's going to be full color, fully annotated, fully indexed, probably around 500 pages for book one. So I was fortunate enough to have a gentleman by the name of Robert Maringolo reach out to me.
And I noticed that. I noticed that right here about, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so Robert and his crew, who are all appraisers, I mean, we're talking Sotheby's and people from Cambridge University, experts in their field, such as military weapons and so on, they run the Appraisers Roadshow, which they go around and they help nonprofits. So the Thomas Cole, the Letters of Thomas Cole Project is affiliated with the Cairo Historical Society, who is their 501c3 funnel, if we could call it that, where people who would like to have tax-deductible donations can donate to the project and be able to, you know, write it off on their taxes.
Now, so, I wanted to first say that this is so important. For one reason, it's to gather money for you for the support.
Right.
But it's also so cool the fact that all your items, things that you've thought about, can be brought in. There's finally,
yep.
You see it on TV all the time, and there's so many times I see these people bring in these certain objects, and I'm going, oh, that's so awesome. First of all,
exactly.
Or, God, I have something I wonder,
yep.
I really wonder. And then I start thinking, well, I'm only going to narrow it down to three items that I think that I'll say, uh-huh. This is for my great-grandmother, and then
yep.
I bring it in and find out it's either worth millions or
$10.
$1.50.
Yeah, so...
So this is very important.
Yeah, so Robert said, look, I want to do this for you because I really am... I mean, he's involved in art and so on, so he's passionate about it. He said, I want to help you get this book out. You know, I think it's so cool. So can we do a show for you? I said, sure. Wow. That's so nice of you to offer to do that. So we have a show up in Wyndham. It's going to be this Saturday, May 26th, from 10 to 4 p.m., and we're going to be at St. Teresa of the Child Jesus, their parish hall, which is at the back of the church, up in Wyndham. And people are encouraged to bring in, you know, their dolls, their stamps, their antique crocs and stoneware.
Military weapons.
Oh, oriental carpets.
Stamps.
Oh, you name it. Clocks, watches, paintings, furniture, jewelry.
Sculpture.
You name it. They will look at it. They
Russian
will tell
art.
You whether it's worth something.
Wow.
And so my husband's saying to me, I think I'm going to come up. And I looked at him going, really? And he goes, yeah, I want to bring that bull you have. I have this porcelain bull.
Really?
Yeah, it's about 12 inches wide and maybe, I don't know, 10 inches high that I've had since I was a teenager that someone gave me. It's really a very cool bull, but I know nothing about it and I don't know if it's worth 5 cents. So he says, I'm going to bring the bull in. So I thought that was pretty fun.
Yeah, that is. And then the appraisers, too, are pretty renowned.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Robert Maringolo is actually a former Sotheby's associate.
Wow.
Yeah. So his specialty is Oriental antiques and general antiques and art. We have Lark Mason, who's a former head of Sotheby's Chinese department. So if you've got that Chinese, when you watch the one on TV, you see them always bringing in this Chinese art sculpture.
My parents have some Chinese artwork.
Yeah. So if you bring it in, he'll be able to tell you. We also have Colin Fraser, who's the former head of Christie's stamp department.
Wow.
And I want to bring in my sheet of stamps that my dad got me from probably just after the Weimar Republic in Germany when money just devalued to almost nothing and each stamp was like 5 million marks.
Oh, yeah.
I have a whole sheet of them.
Oh, yeah. I have Elvis first day of issue.
Oh, wow. There you go. Well, there's the guy that can tell you whether your stamp is worth 5 cents or not.
I know.
And then, of course, we have Ray Zilla, who is from Mohawk Arms Auctions. He's our military arms expert, swords, guns. And I know up the mountaintop, we've got some great Revolutionary War soldiers, descendants, as well as Civil War descendants.
That's what I was going to say. There's so many people that I hear throughout the years that find this stuff in the ground, these pieces of weapons and or coinage or whatever, or
right.
In their barn. Or
uh-huh.
Because we do have so much history from that
we
year.
We do. But a lot of them are actual descendants of these people. And these pieces have been handed down. We have such a rich history of Revolutionary War soldiers in this area. It's incredible. But I have a friend of mine. She found a War of 1812 button in Round Top in the ground. So I got to make sure to call her and tell her, you might want to come in.
I got
to
stop you there. They actually had a War of 1812 button?
Yes. It was in the ground. They found it.
Okay.
Isn't that neat?
Yeah, it's neat, but I'm just surprised they gave out buttons for War of 1812.
It didn't say 1812, but it was made at that time. There was something about the button that you knew.
Okay.
That was from a War of 1812.
Okay.
And I don't know what it is, but that's their theory. And so now they should come in and prove that it's right, you know? And then we have, Paul Chmielewski.
Yeah,
am I right?
Yeah, I think you...
I'm sorry, Paul, but I'm trying my best here.
When you have a problem with names like that, you just say it real quick. Paul Chmielewski.
Right. There you go. He's a former Sotheby's associate as well with jewelry, watches, glass, china, silver. So, I mean, he knows his stuff. And then John Chachuk, who does books, documents, historical antiques, and works on paper. So he's a papers guy. Now, what's here? The next lady, Katerina Kroman, it's so funny. I was doing a research for a gentleman on the Wade family from Durham, and he had asked me to find the family homestead.
Okay.
Katerina lives in it.
Really? Wow.
So when I saw her name in there, I said, I met this woman before because I actually found this house.
Right.
And I actually went up and asked her if I could bring the family there because they live like way far away in southern United States. And she had agreed to allow me to bring them so they see the house of their ancestors.
Okay.
So it was very cool. So,
right.
And then we have Walter Bazaar, who has a master's degree in fine art, lives in Paris, France, and in Saratoga. So he is our paintings and sculpture expert.
And it was just important to read off all these people because it shows their expertise in what they're doing, be it the military weapons or the paintings or the books, the documents. So now you kind of have a more of an insight to what
there's
you
credibility
might
have.
Here. Yeah, and the credibility with that too. So
these are experts in their fields. And so, you know, some people want to just come in and find out whether it's worth anything. And some people want to find out it's worth something and sell it. And these folks will entertain that idea as well.
Yeah, and some people don't want to sell it too.
No, they don't have to.
You just want to know the value of it.
Absolutely. And so there's a minimal charge to actually look at that. I'm not going to say numbers. I'm just saying minimal charge. And so there's no appointment necessary. People can come up and,
Why don't we give the time and a location for that? Do you want to go with it?
I will do it. It's Saturday, May 26th from 10 to 4 at St. Teresa of the Child Jesus Church in their parish hall, which is at the back of the church, which is at 5188 New York Route 23 in Wyndham. So as you're coming into Wyndham, coming up the mountain and then going into Wyndham, it's the church on the right, just before you come into the village.
So the Appraiser's Roadshow this
you
Saturday
bet.
From 10 to 4.
Bring your treasures and come meet me.
And also, give me the information on the Thomas Cole Project, the letters.
Sure. So the letters to Thomas Cole are going to be a 3-volume set, hardcover, full color, annotated, indexed. Volume 1 will cover the years 1820 to 1836, and it's to be published in 2019. Volume 2 will cover the years 1837 to 1840, and Volume 3 will cover the years 1841 until he died in 1848. The publisher is Flint Mine Press. They also published the Green County Historic Homes book, which is a gorgeous table book that they did which they did for the Green County Historical Society. So they're visually absolutely beautiful books, but they're also very rigorous in terms of historical accuracy. I can vouch for that because I had to do a lot of fact checking for the Carol Hometown's Hero book. So we will have more information about the letters of Thomas Cole if you come on up. And if you're interested in finding out about it and you can't make it up, feel free to give me a call at 518-821-3852.
Okay, well, we got it all in. And
yeah.
Sylvia, once again, thank you so much. And we look forward to having you here again next month with an interesting subject.
Well, maybe we'll get to the Uncle Sam Bridge now, finally.
That one, but also Tom wanted me to ask about Who's the gangster? The peg leg or no?
What Legs Diamond?
Legs Diamond.
Oh, I love to talk about Legs.
Yeah.
He's so, from the Caro area.
Yeah.
So, I can talk about him.
Yeah. So we might try to delve into that subject
no problem.
If we can.
Yeah, yeah.
Or whatever we choose. So we'll work on it. So I'm going to put on a song and I'll be back in a second. And Sylvia, thank you so much.
My pleasure.